Silver Script will be correcting this in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully they'll send you a letter about this, but if not, please know that we are, in fact, enrolled in Silver Script. If you have any questions about this or about your prescriptions, give us a call at Montpelier Pharmacy, 223-4633, or at Waterbury Pharmacy, 244-7701. We're a local Vermont company, and we're very proud to be independent. Thank you.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Condi. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Beautiful day today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Coming up on the program this morning, we're later this hour going to check in with State Senator Kevin Mullen. Going to talk about the John Gruber case. You know, he's a guy I think you don't even need to explain anything more than that these days. In the news, the healthcare consultant who has made some really inflammatory comments, the administration yesterday kind of severing their ties with the consultant. So we'll check in with the state senator from Rutland. And Kevin's been an important person in this debate because it was his amendments that were put into the healthcare bill which called for these economic studies to be done to see whether or not any of the financing plans the administration comes up with will hurt the economy. So we'll chat about that coming up later on in the program. We'll take your phone calls. Love to hear from you at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. A quick programming note coming up on the program tomorrow. The chief, Ken Squire, is going to be sitting here in for me. There's a journalism conference going up in Burlington. Thought it might make sense for me to go. All right, speaking of journalism, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Charlie Smith. Charlie is the CEO at Vermont PBS. That, of course, is the TV station over in Colchester, a station that I get the privilege to appear on now and then. Charlie, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm great this morning, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show.
You started this job back in April, took over after John King left the position, somewhat controversial. So why'd you entertain and even take the job?
Well, the station had gone through a rough patch. I was fortunate enough to have the flexibility in my work schedule to take this on when the board turned to me and asked if I would step in and provide transitional leadership. I don't have a background in broadcasting, so in a way, it is from my point of view as a self-employed consultant, who I look at lots of different kinds of projects and different kinds of industries. But from my point of view, this has been just a great assignment, and it is an interim assignment. I was appointed for transitional purposes, and there will presumably in the next month or two be a permanent CEO appointed. But for me, you know, I look at Vermont PBS. This is a very important organization to Vermont, so that's important to me, and I did value an opportunity to step in and hopefully make a positive difference to an organization with this kind of importance. But also, just personally, to airdrop into an industry and into a setting where I don't have the background and really learn it, you know, pretty deeply on the backs of some really wonderful professionals and a very fundamentally sound team. I mean, that's a dream. And in learning about the industry from the folks who are there, who are on this team, I think I've been able to help them reflect also on what public media is about, why it's important, why they love the work they do, and what are the things that are going really well, and what are the things we need to think about for the future?
Let's talk a little bit about your background. I would describe you as an organization person. You've run the Agency of Human Services. What else have you done in your career that would prepare you for what you're doing right now?
Well, I've been in small business. Really, there have been lots and lots of steps, and I won't take you through the whole compendium of things that I've done in my career, but the highlights in Vermont
actually,
in particular.
You actually nicely boiled it down in a 30-second ad that you ran when you ran for the state senate, and it was a list of items that it was very impressive.
I was president of Key Bank in Vermont for a number of years. When Jim Douglas was elected governor, I was asked to join the cabinet, and I stepped in as the Secretary of Human Services and subsequently the Secretary of Administration. When I left state government, I went to the Snelling Center for Government and led that quite wonderful organization, kind of a public policy think tank, leadership development organization. I led that for, I want to say, 4 years. I can't remember exactly how, you know, something like that, and have been employing myself since then as an independent consultant. I do some projects on my own. I've just completed with a really fun group of people a photovoltaic development under the so-called SPEED program that Vermont established a few years ago. We built a project in Essex Junction, and then I've also along the way kind of at the same time worked for a kind of an interesting array of clients, everything from Vermont 911 emergency communications to some banking related assignments and some energy related assignments. So it's quite a mixed bag, and so I think it's fair to say I have fairly broad management experience and fairly broad strategic experience, and I'm also a generalist, and I think I have a way of looking at different industries and adding some value, even though I'm in this case, you know, the as one example, I'm not by no means an expert in broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. So how do you do it? I mean, when you come in, if you really don't know much about broadcasting, how do you even know where to start?
It, to me, the most effective thing to do is, first of all, you come in with a degree of humility, you know, acknowledging that you're not the expert, but to sit with the people who are expert in this work and to learn from them and to listen to them and understand and keep asking questions until it all fits together and makes sense. It's actually a form of leadership because it helps everybody think through the work that they're doing, and it helps everybody kind of boil it down to something that makes sense to a layman. And I get to ask questions, I get to learn, and I get to help them reflect on what's working and what may need improvement.
When you came in, as you mentioned, there were some troubles going on over there. So what was your goal when you came in? To do what?
I'd say, in a word, to stabilize the organization. I think there was a degree of confusion both in the public but also internally about what was the truth and what wasn't. And, you know, clearly it was turbulent, you know, in a situation with a leadership transition and so forth, that by definition is turbulent. So I think, just in a word, to bring stability, help people remember why it's fun to come to work in the morning and that there's a big purpose to what that work means to Vermont.
Describe to people what was the situation that was causing the problem as you felt it was.
Well, there are lots of pieces and parts, and I frankly won't go into what I believe to be, you know, some of the long and deep background to it, but at the heart of the matter, there had been an anonymous allegation made late last year that the board of directors had held, quote, illegal closed meetings. Now, open meeting laws are really important and very, very important in the public media world, and they should be very important. The heart of the question was whether the board had held, quote, illegal meetings. That really triggered a series of steps, investigations by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and so forth, that were very serious. And the grant, you know, the big federal grant, about $1 million, a portion of that got frozen for that period of time. And of course, that raises questions of will that grant be restored and what does it mean if it's not restored and those sorts of things. Well, the finding, when all was said and done, the finding was that the meetings that were held were legal meetings. That is to say, they were held for an appropriate purpose, and they were closed, but it's appropriate to hold closed meetings when they have to do with personnel or legal contract issues or getting the advice of counsel, things of that kind. So the purpose of the meetings that had been held were perfectly legal. However, a nuance of federal law for open meetings is that executive sessions need to be reported after the fact, not the content of what happened, but they need to be reported that they did happen, and a tagline as to what the purpose was. It was for the purpose of receiving advice of counsel, as an example. That's not a requirement under Vermont open meeting law. When a Vermont public body holds a closed meeting, they have to hold it for an appropriate purpose, but they do not report after the fact. So it was just a misunderstanding, frankly. It was a procedural issue, and it got blown out of proportion in my estimation. Nonetheless, it was the basis for significant turbulence for a few months.
It just raised questions of transparency and
Absolutely. Credibility. Absolutely.
So how do you, when you come in as sort of, almost the Harvey Keitel character in Pulp Fiction to come clean up the mess, so how do you recreate, transparency and credibility?
Well, you to some extent it's luck, and to some extent it is just bringing the right focus, that you communicate openly, you model the behavior you want the organization to reflect. When conversations, you make sure all the right people are participating in the same conversation rather than two people talking about a third one, that type of thing. You just sort of identify where the little dysfunctions may be and build a track record of doing it differently and modeling a different kind of behavior. And it really was not very difficult in this case. I mean, I think the problems were, it had blown up to being pretty significant, but it's an organization that was very ready to start looking to the future and, marching towards a positive future. And so there was a short period of turbulence. It was serious, but we have moved past that long ago, frankly, and there's great stuff on the horizon.
So it wasn't as though, did you need to go in and clean house a little bit?
I wouldn't put it that way, but there's been some staff turnover, and I think refreshing some of the ranks is a good thing to do.
You mentioned that one of the things you did is you went in and you listened and you tried to learn from people. So what did you learn from people that you talked to inside the building?
Well, partly not being of the broadcast industry, big question that I started with, I mean, one of many, but a really important one is, so what is the future? What is the right future for a little television station that arguably is an intermediary between PBS National and a viewing public in a world that's moving towards the internet? I mean, what do we do to stay fresh and relevant and important and reflective of the mission of public media? And so it's been a very rich discussion, and I didn't have the answers to that, but what I discovered was that lots of people have had really good ideas. There were some very good things in the works that have now come to fruition and are there as part of a platform to build on. So I just kind of learned a lot about the strategic possibilities with a station of this kind.
Mm-hmm. Did you did the question come up in your mind, why isn't there more local programming?
Absolutely. And that, to me, is a part and parcel of the strategic future. Now, let me just tell you what I am most excited about and what I see for this station going forward.
I stop you?
Sure.
Can you do that in a minute? Can you first answer my question? Why isn't there more local programming?
Well, on the main channel for Vermont PBS, we have a contract with PBS National, and essentially that locks up about 80% of the airtime. So it leaves a relatively small amount of time, essentially an hour every evening, except for Thursday evenings where we get more hours on Thursday, and then we have some flexibility on the weekends. And there's really actually not that much time available in the schedule of the main channel flexible programming. So it really does feel, to a large extent, like we're in this sort of intermediary role. And the great strategic difficulty of that is that for the programs, wonderful programs, be they Masterpiece Theater or Nova or, these great programs that come out of NewsHour and so forth, that come out of PBS and come out of the national realm, the viewer is really not dependent on an intermediary TV station to see the programs. The internet really provides a more flexible platform and more people over time are going to move in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was going to say was, in July we were able to turn on what we call the Vermont Plus channel. It is actually a fourth television channel. We have had three. There are two. Along with the main channel, we've all long time have had World and Create, which are sort of, again, passed through programming largely from national sources. So we've added this fourth channel as of July. Call it the Plus channel, and the Plus channel is a platform where we control all of the air. That is to say, we can program 24 hours a day uniquely. Hmm. Now, as it is, we have to build up to that, you know, build that muscle, if you will. So for the time being, there's actually a fair amount of program that, you know, flows through from PBS. But it is a platform where we can build, where we can schedule more and more and more local content. Some of that is content that we'll produce ourselves, but the real opportunity is to reach out to content producers around the state and say, hey, look, mm-hmm. if you want to showcase your great work, yep. we have a place for you to do that, and we will cross-advertise from the main channel. We'll tell the world that your program is going to be on our Plus channel, and we're looking forward to really being a place to showcase all kinds of things that come from other producers. And I'll give you a couple of examples that I think are going to be very powerful. We are well down the path in talking to the Flynn Theater. The Flynn is the producer of the Jazz Festival in Burlington, the Discovery Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. So they've invited us to come into the Flynn space during the Jazz Festival, where they hold a series of eight evening performances with eight different what I call pre-breakout jazz artists from around the country. And the track record of this segment of the Jazz Festival is that some of these artists within a few years are big names. Mm-hmm. But the Flynn gets them before they're big names, and so they've invited us to come in and film that, so that that's content that we can play down the road on the main channel and the Plus channel. We'll own the content. We can play it as often as we want over the years. Part of that vision is that as we build more and more content, who knows? You know, this is a dream, but we'd like to think that there might be a future out there that is Burlington's equivalent of Austin City Limits, which is, a longstanding great music performance program out of Texas. So that's just one example. We're talking to the Paramount Theater about some of what they do. We're talking to, we'll be in conjunction with the Vermont Humanities Council, the University of Vermont, will be filming the Salman Rushdie lecture mm-hmm. in January. There are all kinds of possibilities about how we can help to facilitate and then be the showcase for great content. Another example, although we have so far really run it only on the main channel, but the Ken Squire film that was done by Ed Dooley out of Mad River Media. Great, great film about Ken Squire and his career. And to know that we've got a place to run films of that quality and that importance to Vermont over the years, it really matters. And so having this Plus channel and all that capacity is a big deal.
How many times do you think you can run that thing, though, you know? I mean, seriously.
Once a year for now till the end of time.
So
twice a year, maybe.
This station, how do you access it? Is it a station that is going to be on cable? Is it something I can only get through the Internet? How does it work?
No, it's a fourth high definition channel. I live in Burlington. I get it on Burlington Telecom, but it's on all of the cable networks around the state. I don't think there are any that are not running it. I'm pretty sure it's carried by the satellite net, the satellite state, whatever you call them, satellite mm-hmm. networks and mm-hmm. so forth, Dish and so forth. So I can't, it's a different number on the dial and different, for different cable companies, but
easily accessible.
It's easily accessible.
We're talking with Charlie Smith. He's the CEO at Vermont PBS. You can join us at 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Do you have the funding to really put a lot of local programming on that station?
When it needs to be produced and edited, that is to say, when we go into the Flynn with four cameras and then we do some editing and so forth, there is a cost to it. And so I'm in the process of getting underwriting for it right now. And we have a corporate sponsor who is going to sponsor at a level that guarantees that the project is a go from a financial standpoint. And now I'll be building on that base. Really reaching out to potential individual philanthropists because it's to me a real opportunity to talk to the philanthropic community about the power of this sort of 1+1=3 type of alliance that we're building with the Flynn and that we can now be building with other great partners as well.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with the main station about that question you raised about the migration of people to the internet?
Well, I don't have a great answer to that. Television is television, but we are also building our own capacity on the internet, and so for Masterpiece Theater, you can go to PBS National, you can go to our website as well. There's a lot on our website, and we're trying to make that increasingly valuable and useful to the viewing public, and a go-to place for really valuable and important local and national content. We kind of want to do it all. We think there's still a fairly long horizon where lots of people are going to want to get, their shows by television, but it is a changing balance, and I don't know, in 5 to 10 years from now, it may have shifted much farther than it has so far. But I think the television medium is still very, very important, will be for many years.
Who's deciding these big future ideas? Is it the board? Is it you? Is it the people in the building? Who's making these judgment calls?
You mean in terms of how we use the Plus channel?
Yeah,
that type of
and how you're going to go forward here, and what you're going to put on, and whether you're going to put,
I think it's a fun discussion, and it's a great collaboration throughout the staff and the board. The board is active from a generative standpoint as well. It's not just that, every once in a while we report to the board and tell them the great things we're doing. I think the board has been quite active in helping us think through what some of these relationships might be, how to approach them, how to think about them, and generally giving us a pretty enthusiastic review for some of the ideas that are bubbling.
But how do you know it's what viewers want?
In my short time, what I'm, for me, it's a certain amount of guesswork. I know what I like, and I know what I think is important. I have an opinion about what I think is important for Vermont in terms of the partnering and the relationships that can yield great content. I don't know what the specific content's going to look like comprehensively. I'm pretty sure there's going to be I think it's an important mission, to use the Flynn example. I think it's very important that what would otherwise be limited to an audience of 200 people who get the opportunity to buy a ticket and see this great music each night for 8 nights, to have that become available to every household that happens to want to watch it is hugely important. It just democratizes things that historically, by definition, have been small audience opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean everybody's going to care, everybody's going to watch it? No, certainly not. But that everybody has the opportunity to see something like that, if you live 100 miles away from Burlington, you may not get the opportunity to be at the jazz festival.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, likewise, there's great stuff of that type that happens all over the state. And if we can figure out how to make it available and accessible to everybody, then people can pick and choose.
Maybe I won't go. Maybe I'll just stay home and watch it on TV later on.
You could, but, you know, there's something about seeing it in the moment. I don't think anybody's concerned that what we're doing in that vein is going to cannibalize the power of the jazz festival and what you see in the moment. And, you know, so I don't think anybody's worried about that kind of erosion. But, you know, at the margin, there may be a few people who say, I'll watch it at home. The jazz festival is much bigger than this segment of eight shows.
You'd have to cannibalize pretty deep to make a dent in that.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the most, it's just a great, great event for Vermont, week of events.
We're talking with Charlie Smith, the head of Vermont PBS. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. You say the controversy is well behind Vermont PBS. How do you declare victory on that war?
Consider it declared.
Right.
No,
what do you base that on?
Look, one of the big questions that hung out there was, will there be a great big fine from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Will they freeze our grants and so forth? There was more fine than I wanted, but it was a small, because I frankly think that I won't get into it, but you look around the country at different kinds of things that happen, and I think ours was disproportionately small as an issue, quite frankly, and so we paid a fine, $15,000, and it's a, you know, not a large amount of money in the scope of a $6 million organization, but that shoe dropped. That issue is over. There's end of discussion. We will not ever again be out of compliance on that or any of the other major points of accountability that the Corporation Public Broadcasting holds us to. So it's over. We actually just last week received the 70% of our grant for the current fiscal year. That's about $700,000 came to the organization last week, which is, again, it's a very significant part, but not the lion's share at the end of the day of our $6 million budget. But it, I think, is emblematic of the fact that we're in the good graces of our major regulator and funder and marching ahead with confidence.
Mm-hmm. What are you hearing from people that they want to see more of on Vermont PBS, even if you don't have the flexibility to do it as you described before?
Our audience loves the stuff that comes through from PBS National. I mean, our audiences absolutely love Masterpiece Theater, the mysteries, the British comedies, the things that we do acquire nationally and internationally. What I hear more about overall, though, would be the things that make our station unique, and that is to say things, the opportunities for local content, the things that really do connect our viewers to the community and the culture and the public affairs and so forth of Vermont. That's what our unique capability is, because there are other ways to get the other stuff. We hear it, and we know it to be the case, and we know it to be strategically important to keep going aggressively and confidently down that local content path.
Mm-hmm. Mountain Lake over in New York, I mean, do you try to counter-program them? Do you even care what they're doing or not?
I think our programmer probably pays closer attention than I do. I don't. From time to time, I'll see something, you know, as I flip through channels, I'll see something on Mountain Lake that I'll say, you know, I wish I was seeing that on my channel right now. But the same thing is likely to be on our channel. Either it was the day before or will be a day after. I frankly, in my short time there, don't think a lot about Mountain Lake. It's a fine organization as far as I know. It comes into play in my discussions more almost in terms of our mutual interest in Quebec, the Quebec audience, than in any other frame.
Huh.
Because we do, frankly, compete a little bit for members and donors out of Quebec. And there are, you know, different kinds of arrangements about how a U.S. station can get its message out and get its signal out in Quebec. And, you know, so there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's competition, but we pay attention to that fairly closely. But otherwise, I haven't actually had too much engagement.
Right. Here's a hint. You do it in French. So how long are you going to be doing this?
I've been doing it for 7 months. I am open to whatever the need of the organization is to get through a really well-executed transition with a permanent CEO. I have not looked to step into that role on, to keep this role on a permanent basis myself. Partly because I was hired, you know, I came in with a particular focus, with the understanding that this search process would go on in a kind of a parallel way so that I could do the work I was hired to do. So I chose not to engage in the search for my own purposes. But I also, I've got so many different kinds of personal projects going on and things that I'm interested in that I didn't feel it was the time in my life to make the commitment for an extended number of years to make the kind of commitment that this station absolutely needs from its next permanent CEO.
Where are things in the search process?
A large list of candidates was narrowed down to a list of five. Those five have been interviewed, and the board will be processing through what it got from the interviews and what the staff got from the interviews and making an offer to somebody, I suspect, within the next week or two.
Really? Okay.
That's my expectation. I don't want to push the process faster than its natural pace. We do have the holidays coming up, Thanksgiving, and, you know, so I don't know what the exact pace of this will be, but it's coming to a head fairly soon.
Okay. Can you just give me a sense of what's the type of person that's being looked for?
Well, you know, we actually cast the net quite wide in the sense that the hope in the way this has panned out is that we would have candidates to choose from that would be internal to Vermont, some that would be external to Vermont, that we would have some that are from the public media industry and some that are from other, you know, with the common denominator that whoever winds up in this job has to have a passion and an understanding of the mission of public media. It was not the intent that the candidate necessarily had to come from a public media or, for that matter, even a media background. They needed to be persuasive that they could get their arms around the needs of a media company. But the hope, and I think it's worked out this way, is that the pool of people would have provide a wide range of backgrounds to pick from.
All right. That was kind of vague, Charlie, but that's okay. I understand. Let's go to Middlebury. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I was curious, how does PBS plan to keep themselves relevant? What I'm going from is that they're literally, at least for my DISH network, hundreds of channels to choose from almost. And I'm kind of curious is that, you know, there's got to be an overall plan to grab that market share that's out there, because there's so many different shows to watch for me as a viewer that almost are parallel to what PBS provides in a bunch of different areas.
Mm. All right. Thanks.
Well, you know, I think it's a very fair point. We have observed over a period of years lots of cable channels that have declared that they were going to come into this space with documentaries or public affairs or different kind, you know, different pieces and parts of the program that we think we're the best at. And oftentimes they'll start with good quality and they'll wind up in a kind of a Duck Dynasty place. And so we do think that there is a consistency to what PBS brings to the market that hasn't changed. A consistent quality, a consistent balance in the public affairs space, a consistent balance and depth and good research and fact-based reporting that isn't easily found necessarily in the cable network world. But I think your point's very well taken, that any station, any media company in this day and age has to think every day about what it is that makes it fresh and relevant. And for me, the big answer to that for Vermont PBS is in this local content issue. How do we partner with important content providers around, of different types? I mean, from Vermont Digger in the public affairs world to the Flynn Theater in the stage music performance world, and a lot in between. How do we partner with great organizations in Vermont to bring rich local content to households?
Last question. How would you describe the strength of Vermont PBS's fundraising?
Well, we have, first of all, in the big picture for our $6 million in revenue overall, we have fairly diverse sources. It's not all on the back of fundraising. Fundraising is very, very important. The membership side of it is very important. And I would say we have seen with the ups and downs of the economy and also with the shifts in the technology and how people consume, we've seen some erosion to the membership base. So we have to keep thinking about, you know, how to be effective in reaching people and communicating without it being too preachy a message, communicating that it's very important. If people value what we do, it's very important to sign up and be a member. I think for kind of growth revenue and so forth looking down the road, I think probably major donor type fundraising is really where the bigger growth category is going to be.
Okay. Boy, a lot of people competing for that same money though, right?
Well, you got to prove your value and be persuasive.
Why was the name changed from to Vermont PBS?
Long before I came to the company, there was quite a process that they underwent to think about rebranding and what is the right way to have the name express what this company is going to be going forward. For me, the big issue there was to kind of move away from the word television directly in the name. It had been Vermont Public Television. So Vermont PBS kind of is a shift away from that kind of exclusivity that is suggested by the word television. Broadcasting still kind of implies over-the-air television, but nonetheless, I think that's a relevant factor. And I think the other big factor was just that PBS is possibly the most trusted brand in the country, bar none, bar any other, and so it's a nice association to build.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Charlie Smith is the CEO at Vermont PBS. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we're going to talk with State Senator Kevin Mullen. We'll talk about the administration's announcement yesterday on John Gruber. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Deborah Wachtel, and I have been providing health care for Vermonters as a nurse practitioner for 28 years. The most frustrating barrier to my delivering of